those of WMPG or the University of Southern Maine or any of Blunt's funders or supporters. Blunt Youth Radio welcomes opposing views.
It has to start somewhere. It has to start sometime. What better place than here? What better time than now?
What's your contribution going to be? What problems are you going to solve? What discoveries will you make?
I intend to broadcast from this ship 24 hours a day until the day I die. And then for a couple days after that.
No one's written your destiny for you. You make your own future.
I've always lived for news and weather. Happy to die for them too. Especially the weather.
Schools facing hard times and city and state governments. So welcome to the show, Tom.
Thank you very much.
So to start, what does We Who Care do?
Well, basically your opening piece pretty much covered it.
So I believe we're going to start with a clip from Susan Ali, an intern with Cultivating Communities here in Portland, Maine.
Hi, my name is Susan Ali, and I'll be 18 soon. I'm intern here with Cultivating Community. I'm originally from Sudan, Darfur, and back there we have like a lot of genocide there. So I see a lot of people. I see people every day dying because of hunger, or kids, women, men, old people, all. That's like the real hunger. It's really sad to see people like that, and not just in Sudan, the world, it's everywhere, and like the place has war, it has hunger.
Well, this was one family.
So this is an example of one person who obviously has a very personal experience with hunger, and
how do you feel hunger comes about, especially in first world countries like ours?
Well, I'm not sure how to answer that particular question, but I would like to step back to your opening remarks.
Yes.
And what you folks said that you had to eat. And reflecting on what I've had to eat today, that's more than I've eaten today. I think I've had a couple of peanut butter and crackers all day. But that's okay. That's what I chose to eat. But to get back to your question, I honestly cannot answer that in second and third world countries, because that's a little beyond my, that's more a federal preview, not so much a state.
So how about Maine?
Well, in Maine, we have our shortages, and we have some very unique corporate sponsors that are trying to step forward and help us with our funding shortages for food, and our actual produce and food, actual hands-on food resources.
You mentioned that We Who Care works closely with individuals going through hard times.
Mm-hmm.
So how does hunger affect the people that you work with?
Well, you know, that's a good question because, I mean, like a day like today, if you're just coming out onto the street, you have no idea where a soup kitchen may be.
Hmm.
You have no idea where to go and find a trash bag to cover up with until you can get your check to purchase a raincoat and then put some money aside for some food and then put some money aside, hopefully, to find an apartment that you can afford later on down the road.
Mm-hmm.
So what we do is if we happen to get a phone call, then we go out, we find the individual, we meet up with them, we basically do what we call a field, call a field assessment to find out what their needs are, what their wants are, and how we can directly help them right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's the here and now that's important to us and We Who Care. So after we've done the basic assessment, then we, you know, the one thing is, okay, I need to eat.
Mm-hmm.
We take that per individual to the nearest soup kitchen and we stand there in line with them because standing in line at a soup mm-hmm. kitchen is not a very nice place to be.
Mm-hmm.
And especially on a day like today. I'm sorry.
We're going to have to move on to the next clip. We have a woman at Harbor Terrace here in Portland, Maine, who is food insecure at a mobile food pantry.
Well, this was one family over a 4 to 6 month period. I'm the grandmother. I'm on Social Security. And I do take advantage of all the opportunities at the food stamps and the food pantry. But then my daughter was diagnosed with MS. She has an autistic son and a husband who works, but he's a chef and makes minimum wage. She lost her high-paying job at Maine Med because of the MS. And for a while, they didn't know if they were going to eat or not. She started going to Preble Street with me. And eventually, we did get her on food stamps. And even that, she's still going to Preble Street. And then my granddaughter, who just graduated high school, is in a situation where she has to feed herself. She had no job. And so I started taking her to Preble Street. And that only lasted a couple of months. She got a job, and then after a month, she got a decent paycheck. And so she's okay now. So it can be long-term, or it can be 2 or 3 months that people need help. That's basically my story about that. Well, really, two things. The people that go to the pantry at Preble Street every Thursday, but more than them even, is a faceless face. The people you don't see that stay in their apartments, don't let anybody know they're hungry, and quietly starve to death.
And I've seen it.
I've seen that, so. We personally need to watch out for our friends and neighbors and make sure they got food in some fashion. It's just up to us to do it.
So, really, she really spoke to hunger being a sort of an invisible issue that people don't really take much interest in, and a lot of people are just fighting to survive. What would you say to those with no way out?
Well, you know, I absolutely have to agree. We talk about various diseases being a faceless issue. Well, among those is, and as far as I'm concerned, it is a disease, mm-hmm. and that is the disease of hunger.
Mm-hmm.
And we do so much to make sure that we assist other countries mm-hmm. and so forth. And we also do a okay job at assisting our own But I think we could do a little more to assist our own.
Going back to what you said before, you said you help people walk down the line at the soup kitchen. Mm-hmm. What are people's initial reactions like the first time they have to walk into a soup kitchen?
It varies. Mm-hmm. There are people that will say, no, I am absolutely not going there.
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't want to go there because I'm scared.
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't want to go there because I'm better than that.
Yeah.
It's a matter of pride for a lot of people.
A lot of people, it is a matter of pride, mm-hmm. Josh. And until you've actually experienced it, and I don't mean just for a day.
Yeah.
I mean until you've actually experienced it. It's great to go out and, as we used to say, walk a mile in my shoes. Well, it's mm-hmm. great to walk out there for that one day and, you know, assume that you're homeless and carry no more than $5 in your pocket and do the various things mm-hmm. that homeless people do.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't even really give you a good, really good taste.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, yeah. it does give you a taste for it on a very minute level.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really, you know, I mean, until you've actually done it and you've had to do it because, let's say because your parents have said, we're just not going to have you living with us anymore. Or
mm-hmm.
You've made the decision. I mean, you know, you're both in high school and whatever. So, you know, you may not actually. You may not know that, you know, some of your classmates are staying at one of the youth shelters in the city. Excuse me. You know, so you can't really help them.
Mm-hmm.
I agree that a lot of people can't really feel sympathetic, and a lot of people don't want to think of themselves that way.
Yeah.
So they, most people can't sympathize with the feeling of having nothing to fall back on.
Right.
We've got another clip now from Mary Zwolinski, the executive director of Wayside Food Programs.
My name is Mary Zwolinski, and I'm the executive director of Wayside Food Programs here in Portland. Many years ago, when I just got out of graduate school and moved back to Chicago where I was living and couldn't find a job, and so I was doing some temp work. And I remember at one point having $5 to buy food for the entire week and thinking, how am I going to do this? Now, if I buy black beans and rice, you know, but I mean, I was kind of in that position where I had I was only feeding myself. So, you know, I know people deal with this and have children and other families, but it was really this question of how far can I stretch $5? And, you know, and to me that when I think back on those times, I think, you know, that was really a tough time. I mean, I didn't ask people for help. I didn't even, you know, call my parents and say, can you help me out for some reason? But having to stand there in the grocery store and think, what can I get for $5 that will keep me fed all week long? You know, and it was usually beans and rice. So I think about that now, and I think, what if I had two kids and I had to do that as well? So I had to think about milk and, you know, fruits and vegetables. I mean, it just breaks my heart because I think it's such an unhappy position to be in. Nobody wants to make those kinds of decisions, and, you know, doesn't really always matter whether I was out of graduate school. I mean, it doesn't, you know, your position, you can't look at somebody and say they're hungry or they're not hungry. When I think about hunger in Portland, I mean, if you're just looking at a visual picture, I do think about the lines outside the Preble Street Resource Center, because I think that's the most visible one, and that's the one that people really see and automatically are drawn to. But I think since Wayside's been working with community meals outside of the resource center, one of the pictures that is not as clear but is out there are the people who don't go to that soup kitchen but are still food insecure and need some help. And a lot of times those are families, a lot of times they're seniors. So there's both the picture that everybody sees, and then there's kind of the picture that you don't see quite so often. What we are finding is that it's important to feed children, and it's important to feed them all year long, not just during the school year. That summer is a really tough time for kids because they don't get the meals at school. One of the things that we do at Wayside is we have a food rescue program. So what we do is we source and redistribute food that otherwise might end up in the trash can or dumpsters, but it's perfectly good food. It might be turned away because it's cosmetically, you know, cans are dented or the stuff might be bruised. So I think being able to salvage and redistribute really good, healthy food is another thing to do. But then just to also work in partnership with people who sell food or, you know, source and food like the grocery stores and the big food distributors. You know, they always have more than they need, but they just don't have the vehicles. They don't have the means to get that food out to people who really need it. That's not their business. So I think being able to, you know, get at the problem in different layers, people who have the food, people who know the business of redistributing food, people who work with people who need food. I mean, it's kind of a layered approach. And I think that that's really the only way you're going to get it out to people who need it.
I've been at the point where all we could afford to eat was beans.
Hi. So Mary Zwinski discussed a time in her life when she was hungry. So I guess that'd be kind of a good turning point to discuss. Have you ever been hungry? Has hunger ever affected you?
Actually, I lived on the streets for three different times personally.
Mm-hmm.
The first time was 4 or 5 years, and the second time was a year, and the third time was a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And the first time I lived on the streets was back in 1986, and 86, 87. And that was before soup kitchens really came to be around and more noticeable and knowable. And back in the 86, 87... there was one soup kitchen, and that was in the morning at the Preble Street Resource Center, which was then across the street from where it is now in the Preble Chapel.
So I just wanted to say again, you can call.
This is Blunt's a call-in show. Feel free to call us at 780-4909. Again, that's 780-4909.
I noticed, again, I'm Tyler, and this is Kate, and our show is on hunger. For those of you who just tuned in,
mm-hmm.
We have Tom Andrews here. And we just played a clip from Mary Zwolinski talking about a time in her life when she was hungry. I noticed you give quite a few sympathetic nods, particularly when she was talking about beans and rice, which are not,
yeah.
I suppose, the most nutritious choice, but the most nutritious food doesn't seem to be as available for low amounts of money. Can you speak to that?
Actually, you're right. They aren't. Even today, the more nutritious the food, the more costly it is.
Mm-hmm.
Going through food pantries and so forth, you see the amounts of food that they're able to give out, and you really kind of wonder, now, one can of tuna fish for 5 people?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
But
that's all the food pantry can give you,
yeah.
Because they have, you know, 300 other people to give you, to
yeah.
give to.
So another thing Mary mentioned in her piece was that she didn't have children, or the children during the summer are very hungry. Does We Who Care work with children as well as adults, or is it?
We primarily work with adults,
mm-hmm.
but we'll work with anybody.
Okay.
My basic spin is, and a basic nod from our board is, if you're low income, if you qualify for general assistance or any state funded program, you qualify for advocacy services.
Mm-hmm.
And I should also say at this time also that We Who Care is again going through a little bit of a shakeup because in the past few years, our long-term founder and executive director has passed on, and then our long-term board president has passed on.
Yeah.
So we're kind of reestablishing ourselves.
Have you been able to work with any people affected by hunger recently?
No, actually, we haven't really done much with that recently. We've been, our staff is down to one person, and that I'm it.
Well, I'm assuming you hope to rebuild up We Who Care. You mentioned you're kind of going through, you know, a change and stuff as of recently. Do you have any long-term goals you're planning besides?
Well, actually, we're continuing to work. Just because we're rebuilding and reestablishing ourselves doesn't mean that we're not out there trying to do.
Yeah, no.
We will work with anybody. We don't have much money. So we figure out ways to get us from where we are to where we need to be to assist somebody with the problem that they're having. That may mean a series of telephone conversations and then finally me showing up at their door. It may mean a series of telephone conversations between myself and the individual having the issue, and then myself and the agency that they're having a problem with, and then it may mean a series of conference calls.
So we've got a little statistic here, a little factoid. 23% in Maine, or 1 in 4 kids, are food insecure. So it's nearly 1 in 4 people are having trouble finding food today, which we really don't think about.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I know, especially going to school with people, there are people hungry that you're surrounding, you don't even know. But it's just, it's completely invisible. Yeah. It's incredible.
Up until just a few years ago, there was no, teenagers could go to the Wayside Evening Soup Kitchen, Preble Street Resource Center, St. Vincent de Paul. Those are just three out of all of the soup kitchens. I don't know all the soup kitchens off the top. Up until just a few years ago, younger folks, teenagers, were going to those places and eating, and some of them were causing problems and so forth. So Preble Street came up with a teen center.
I'm afraid I'm going to have to stop you. We have another clip queued up again. It's a food insecure at a community dinner and home gateway. A man who's food insecure at a community dinner at Hope Gateway in Portland.
I've been at the point where all we could afford to eat was beans, and that gets old. So, I mean, hunger is not having what you need to keep going.
I'm one of those people who, you know, has a hard time meeting my expenses and then having anything left over for, you know, stocking the fridge. And there are a lot of times when I go and I open the fridge and there's nothing in there, you know. And I mean, so it's happening to a lot of people, you know. It's not just homeless people. It's not just retirees or disabled people on a fixed income. I think it's happening to more people than we know, and that it's sort of an invisible problem. One of the things I think about, maybe not a picture, but a thought that I have, is about all of the people in town, Portland, who we can't see struggling. You know, people have a hard time meeting their expenses, paying for rent. You know, people are stacked up in apartments with roommates and so forth, and they're spending so much of their income on rent and expenses associated with living that, you know, a lot of people go without. We should really try to bring this issue to the forefront and make it an issue that we could bring to our local decision makers through the city council and to the mayor, and to identify this problem, to quantify it, to talk about this invisible aspect of hunger and take some steps to address it. What steps I would take to end hunger here in Portland, and that I think we could grow a lot more food in Portland for such programs as this, and put people to work growing food. There's a lot of recent immigrants to Portland who are very talented in growing their own food and making the most out of very little. And so I think that'd be a great way to employ people is grow food in all the available space that we have here in town, and try to make a sustainable a program of feeding ourselves. And I think that it would be good to have like a nominal cost type restaurant type soup kitchen. Not something not a soup kitchen, but something at a nominal cost. So those people who don't really consider themselves a type of client that would normally go into a soup kitchen had another option somewhere between, a free meal and a very low cost meal for a couple of bucks. And they have such a kitchen over at Amistad, which is open to the public. And not a lot of people know about it. And then for that matter, not a lot of people would necessarily feel comfortable with going to Amistad, But I think there's a real opening in town for having a program like that, more programs like that with low-cost meals.
So once again, I would like to remind listeners that Blunt is a call-in show, so feel free to call us at 780-4909. Again, that's 780-4909.
Now, he was speaking to his idea of a good solution to hunger was community gardening and having people grow sustainable food. And we've seen a rise of that in suburbia, sort of, but not really in urban Portland. Do you think that people could benefit from that in inner city Portland?
It could be benefited from if it was done properly.
That was loud. Okay.
Sorry.
No worries.
I'm sorry, I lost track of where I was.
Community gardening.
Yeah.
Community gardening could be done and done sustainably. How to do it, I'm not exactly sure. Yeah. That's for better minds than I.
What about the last speaker also talked about having very low-cost meals, like $1 or $2 meals. Do you think that would be beneficial, helpful?
Well, if the money raised from doing that was utilized to go back to the community mm-hmm. gardens and the community grow spaces, that could be beneficial.
Yeah.
The Provo Street Resource Center a few years ago tried what they called a Stone Soup Cafe,
mm-hmm.
Which was a bare bones educational program that they were trying to start for people to learn how to cook and people to learn how to waitress and people to learn how to do various aspects of the restaurant industry. So that they could possibly go out and find a job. Where that's at and how that's doing at this point, I honestly couldn't tell you.
I believe we have the next clip ready.
There are children coming up to me and saying, thank you that I was so hungry. Or, are you going to be back here tomorrow? And mom saying, thank goodness that you're here. I don't know what I would have done. My benefits just ran out. So it's powerful. Hunger to me means the people I work with on a regular basis that are having to make those hard choices, like, do I buy enough groceries this week or do I buy medicine? Choices that, everyday people shouldn't have to make. It's a mother, not skipping meals so that she can feed her children and, things like that, that just in our country shouldn't be happening. Working in the food pantries here around Portland, they're wonderful and they provide that emergency need. And you can see the lines, the long, long lines, but they just can't be sustained in this way. There are limited resources, and we need to address it. And they can't do it all. Well, a lot of the work I do has to do with increasing access to federal nutrition programs and making sure that people are aware that these resources are out there and that we're here to help them in any way we can, and that there is a systemic way of answering this or coming up with a solution to this problem. And that's my role, is trying to help people sign up for these things and to, you know, help them gain access to those resources.
My name is Jim Hanna. I am.
Yeah. So, that was interesting. We got a little cut off in the beginning there, but, I guess we are now moving into our break. I'm Kate Hull, and I'm here with Tyler Simpson and Tom Andrews.
And this is the Blunt Youth Radio show on hunger.
Remember, this is a call-in show, so definitely call us. It's 780-4909. Again, that's 780-4909. So thank you, Tom, and we're going into a break.
Cause I lost my job 2 weeks before Christmas. And I talked to Jesus at the sewer, and the Pope said it was none of his goddamn business. While the rain drank champagne, my Estonian archangel came and got me wasted. Cause the sweetest kiss I ever got is the one I've never tasted. Oh, but they'll take their bonus pay to Molly McDonald. Neon lady, beauty's that which obeys, is bought or borrowed. Cause my heart's become a crooked hotel, full of rumors. But it's I who pays the rent for these fingered face out of tuners. And I make 16 solid half-hour friendships every evening. Cause your queen of hearts, who's half a stone and likes to laugh alone, is always threatening you with leaving. Oh, but they'll play those token games on Willie Thompson and give a medal to replace the sun of Mrs. Annie Johnson. Cause they told me everybody's gotta pay their dues, and I explained that I had overpaid them. So overdue, I went to the company store, and the clerk there said that they had just been invaded.
The weather tonight. A chance of thunderstorms, widespread showers. Some thunderstorms may produce heavy rainfall. Lows in the mid-60s. Southeast winds around 10 miles per hour in the evening, becoming light and variable. Chance of rain 80%. Tuesday, mostly cloudy. A chance of showers and thunderstorms in the afternoon. Some thunderstorms may produce gusty winds and heavy rainfall in the afternoons. Humid with highs in the upper 70s. Light and variable winds becoming south around 10 miles an hour in the afternoon. Chance of rain 50%. Tuesday night. Partly cloudy. A chance of showers and thunderstorms in the evening. Some thunderstorms may produce gusty winds and heavy rainfall in the evening. Lows in the upper 50s. West winds around 10 miles per hour. Chance of rain 50%. Wednesday. Mostly sunny. High in the upper 70s. West winds around 10 miles per hour.
You're listening to WMPG and WQ81AC, Gorm/Portland. Southern Maine Community Radio from USM.
Welcome back to the show. I'm Tyler Simpson.
And I'm Kate Hull. And tonight we're doing the Hunger Show on Blunt, discussing hunger and how it affects those around us. Once again, Blunt is a call-in show, so call us at 780-4909. Again, that's 780-4909. And
we have on the phone Alex Kelly. We're going to play real quick a piece from one of Blunt's members, regarding his fear of homeless individuals.
Every time when I would be going home, I'd be taking the number 2 bus going through Preble Street every day. When the bus stops at the light, I see homeless people and volunteers helping them. Sometimes I see a policeman, too. The road is disgusting. Gum, cigarettes on the ground, and other things I see. Birds around there, too. Probably other people who go there, chatting to each other, seeing how they can help themselves. It is very scary because it could give me nightmares, imagining me down there turning into one of them. But I would never go down there alone because one of those people might hurt me, tackle me. When I get older, I hope I'll never be homeless, with no job, probably living on the streets. I hope that would never, never happen to me. I think people around there are dangerous because you don't know if they have a knife in their pocket, they might do something. For example, on the news, I saw that one day a person was really mentally ill, did something really stupid, like abused their child and got kicked out of their house. It is also very scary because some homeless people walk funny. Maybe one of their legs is broken, or they have a leg problem, or health issues, or maybe they get into a fight once in a while. I just don't know. And that scares me.
The number was mixed up. So give a back outro. Explain to her what this was and ask her to say, how would you give it, you know, like.
Good. All right. So tonight we also have Alex Kelly on the show, and Alex Kelly on the phone. She has been working on youth media projects for over 10 years. Her fascination with other people's stories led her to study narrative psychology at Clark University. Since then, she has worked as a facilitator at Story Corps and has coordinated several distinct youth media and oral history projects, specifically one up in Bangor titled Listen to This, Recording Stories of Bangor's Homeless, which consists of interviews conducted by youth of individuals at the Bangor Area Homeless Shelter. To listen to the entire project, go to the WERU Archives Voices 2009. So, to backtrack a little bit, we just listened to a clip of one of our Blunt members here talking about his fear of homeless people. So, I guess to just launch right into it, what do you think of being afraid of homeless people? I feel like that is a kind of a common fear among people just in general. It's just not usually said.
Yeah, it's absolutely. You know, it's interesting because the fear that I was hearing in conversations with people about homeless people in their communities kind of is what sparked me to create this project in the first place. You know, mm-hmm. I think that when people are fearful, there's a shying away from learning new things about people in their community that they're fearful of.
Definitely.
And you kind of, you know, the reason that I actually worked with high school students in this project is because I think we kind of have to ask ourselves, too, where does this fear, where does this stigma begin? Mm-hmm. You know, it begins in our childhood. It begins with the stories that we hear from other people. It begins with the stories that we hear from our peers. You know, I mean, I remember when I was in high school, definitely riding my bike past the Bangor area homeless shelter, mm-hmm. and you know, having my friends kind of say we should probably ride on the other side of the street. I don't mm-hmm. know about that place. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, I know about fear through my own experience, kind of hearing those fearful bits of conversation about other people in the community.
So Matt's definitely not alone here with the fear of homeless people, and one of the things he spoke to is the fear of seeing himself that way and putting people. I think a lot of people put themselves in their shoes, and mm-hmm. or at least try to, and that scares them. What would you mm-hmm. say to somebody who is afraid of that?
Like yeah. Matt, yeah.
Wow, that's a really, really powerful thought. I had never actually heard it put that way. I do know that. I think that having just simple conversations with people who we might be scared of in our mm-hmm. communities will alleviate the concerns of you know, that part of us that's like, wow, like I'm scared of being like them. I'm scared of being in that position, and that's why I'm scared of them.
Yeah.
And bring it more into the realm of like, wow, you know, I can empathize with how they're feeling. Mm-hmm. You know, there are things in my life that could be similar in a yeah. lot of ways. I remember during the project, actually, that I worked on in Bangor, there was a student who spoke to a guest at the Bangor area homeless shelter, mm-hmm. and he was very similar in age. You know, this particular student was a senior in high school, mm-hmm. and the young man that he was talking to was probably in his early 20s. So, you know, similar age demographic. And they had a conversation about going to the lake. It was very, very simple. And it kind of just like brought the conversation back to the what do we have in common right now. Mm-hmm. And I think that finding opportunities to do that with other people is really important.
Finding common ground.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I definitely can relate to that. I did another show on, we had kids who were, you know, were homeless and they did poetry. And it is definitely very eye-opening to talk to these people. It, you know, so yeah.
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 Instead of putting yourself in their place in your head and being terrified of what you see, you can kind of actually put yourself in their pit.
Yeah.
In their place through what they tell you.
You can relate to them. It's you know, rather than being two completely different separate worlds, it's like, you know, it's that you're both people. It's relatable. Anyway.
Totally.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's doing something that we know how to do already, which is listen, mm-hmm. you know, and have conversations with people. So it's kind of bringing it back to that very, very simple idea of the human interaction that we have with our friends, with our family, with people that we know every day, and bringing it to, you know, to interactions with strangers, taking a chance, you know, is really eye-opening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I guess kind of to turn the tables a little bit, when you're interviewing these homeless people and these hungry people, like, how do they feel about the people who like the non-help? Do they talk about stereotypes made about them? Do they, you know, is it hard? What are their opinions of the people who aren't hungry and aren't homeless? Do they have the same stereotypes? Are they also kind of afraid, intimidated by people?
That's a really, really good question. You know, in the conversations that we had at the shelter, and I think it's important for me to mention, too, that I didn't actually interview any of the shelter mm-hmm. residents,
yeah.
any of the shelter guests. That was the high school students that I worked with did all of the interviewing. So the high school students were kind of coming in with nervousness, and the people that they were interviewing were obviously nervous, because I think even by the very nature of using the word interview, there's kind of, you know, a nervous vibe in the interaction. We tried to use conversation as much as possible to kind of talk about the dynamic. But, you know, there was this, I encouraged the students that I worked with to be honest about how they felt coming into the conversation, to be honest about their curiosity and, you know, a little bit of their apprehension and their openness. And because of that, the people that they were talking to, these guests at the Bangor Area Homeless Shelter, were also very honest with the students who interviewed them, you know, and said, listen, like, this has never happened before. I have never had somebody sit down across from me and say, tell me a little bit about where you came from. And I think it's also important, you know, for me to note that it wasn't about just their identity as a homeless, just their present identity as a homeless person. It was about what their life was like. And so all of the stories that came out, all of the time that they spent kind of being able to tell these stories to somebody who was really just sitting there to listen, not necessarily to ask questions unless it was a long period of silence that kind of needed a question. I think it made them feel really honored. You know, I hope it made them feel really honored. And I hope that it also encourages them to tell more people their stories and other people to listen.
So
I think that answers your question.
Yes, it does. Thank you.
We spoke a little bit earlier with Tom as to the fact that very few people can truly relate to what these people go through, because it's not many people actually bring themselves to go to the shelter and do that. But do you think that sharing stories effectively addresses issues like homelessness and hunger to those who have not directly experienced it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, it's interesting because I think that we're thinking about researching subjects like this in kind of a reverse order in schools oftentimes. You know, there's kind of a tendency to throw statistics and things like that up on a board and say, now, what do you think about this, to a room full of students? And I've definitely, you know, I'm guilty. I've taught in that way before, too. But it's very far removed from anything that's going to make students and people in general be interested in hearing more about something. You know, I think what makes us interested in hearing more about something is when we start out with the very specific, with the individual story. And that's kind of how other research develops, right? You know, if we can, like the example I was giving before, if we can relate to another person about our mutual excitement when we go to the lake, then we'll be that much more interested in learning a little bit more about that person's life and, you know, about the lives of other homeless people in general.
Kind of looking at them as
kind
people.
Kind of flows from that.
Look,
we have a clip.
A clip ready.
Yeah.
You want to?
Great.
Yeah. It's from Jim Hanna. He is he's part of the Cumberland County Food Security Program. He's a manager at United Way.
My name is Jim Hanna. I am the Cumberland County Food Security Council Program Manager at United Way. Well, hunger is personal to me. I think about when I was my son's age. He's about to enter high school, and my father was a truck driver, and he owned his own truck and drove across country. And I remember the first time after he bought that truck, I went on a trip with him. We lived in northeastern Ohio. And I got in that truck, and we started driving west, where he probably had carpet or tires or something that came out of somewhere near where we lived, going to pick up a load of produce in California. But on that road, we getting into western Ohio, you begin to see fields and fields of corn on Highway 80. And then you go through Indiana and more corn, and through Illinois, more corn. And then we hit Iowa, and there are hours and hours of corn. And then Nebraska, they're known as the Corn Huskers, so obviously there's more corn. So there's this corridor of nothing but fields of corn, and it just struck me somewhere, how could anyone in this country possibly be hungry with all this food? course, I didn't know the politics or the fact that a lot of that corn is being processed into, at that point in our kind of evolution of our food system, it began to be processed into things like high fructose corn syrup and corn oils and other things. So it's, you know, being integrated and processed into unhealthy foods for us, as well as a lot of it was used for animal feed. So another inefficient use of all that food. But certainly it just struck me that we could produce more than, and it's been verified that we can produce more than enough food for all the people in the world. So I guess that's where maybe the seed was planted for me to think about, you know, what are the issues in our food system that people can't get enough to eat, that people go hungry. And I guess that's led me to be where I am working, doing what I do today. I see kids in school, in Portland schools, where about half the kids come from families who are eligible for free and reduced-priced meals, which means, for example, a family of four lives on an annual income of about $29,000. So I think about the impact that has on kids' education and health. You know, I picture little kids, but also at high school level, all that development that gets impeded by lack of access to nutritious food. It sounds simple, but raising the minimum wage increases incomes in people's households, and that's the main reason why people don't have enough to eat. People who are hungry or can't get enough food for their families remain largely invisible, and it's not something people are proud of, not something people want to talk about if they're in that financial situation. But our economy, we've made choices to allow our economy to operate like this and to allow people to fall through the cracks and not have a safety net or not to have enough. And it really has so many impacts on our community and the way people grow up in our community, the way people feel alienated in our community. And it, you know, people in this current economy, just many unexpected people find themselves in the situation of having enough to eat. And it can have long-term effects on their children, on their life going forward. So it's just really important that we have a lot of compassion and understanding for the people that are in that situation and try to work together to create a community that doesn't allow hunger to exist among us.
My family is struggling about, you know.
So I guess back to kind of what we were saying before, is it important to share the stories of even those not directly affected by hunger or homelessness? And also, do you think by sharing these stories that more people are inspired to help, to, you know, to help the people who are homeless and hungry?
I would hope so. you know, the first part of your question, so just to clarify, is it helpful to share people's stories who just, you know, are kind of thinking about hunger and homelessness, but not necessarily hungry or homeless themselves?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a two-sided storytelling dialogue. You know, I've actually dreamt of creating a project where students would interview guests at a homeless shelter, and then the homeless shelter guests would interview the students.
That sounds amazing.
You know, so that there's more sharing, you know, and more kind of learning from each other. And yeah, I mean, there's a lot that people have to learn from these stories. I think that we need to figure out how to put the stories out there. You know, I don't just want to collect stories and have them kind of sit somewhere and collect dust. We need to figure out how to make them interesting and keep their unique or keep their genuine quality, rather. That's really, really important to put the truth out there and make it interesting at the same time so that people will take action and want to learn more and just, like, on a basic level, want to talk to people who they might have been scared to talk to before in their communities.
Yeah, definitely. I guess we have, you know, obviously a lot of talk about it, and we have, like, a minimum kind of amount of time, but do you think, I guess...
We've got three more clips coming up. The first is about medicine being food, and another one. Thank you again, Alex, for coming on to talk about hunger.
Yeah.
I've dealt with keeping healthy all my life, and I believe in the adage 3,000 years ago which said, your food is your medicine is your food, and if you can keep good food on the table, you can grow healthy children. And I think a line such as we have in Preble Street every week with lots of women and lots of children, some seniors and elders, and some young people in Disperse indicates that we really need to address the living wage and to address people's needs. Well, I'd make it more visible to people that don't know about what it's like to be hungry. I grew up in a poor family, and I had to learn to forage. I had to learn to fish in lakes, and so I always found resources to supplement my income.
My family is struggling strongly right now. They're not making enough, and they don't have enough biscuits on the table like they used to eat with their coffee. They can't even provide that. And my dad is also on a low-income disability check, and he also cannot support himself like he used to. He was making $4,000 a month. Now he's making $1,700 a month. And it's not enough to provide food on the table for the both of them. And many other reasons, not enough to pay for gas, not enough to pay their water bill. They're facing a possibility they could be facing going to a soup kitchen in the near future. I think of homelessness. I think of people hurting, depression, mental illness. Raise the minimum wage to a reasonable amount so people can afford to survive and put food on the table and provide for their children and their family as well as themselves.
Well, I'm in AmeriCorps Vista.
So we thank you for staying on. We have Alex Kelly here from StoryCorps. She did a homeless interview project, and we also have Lee from South Portland on.
What questions or comments do you have, Lee? Never mind.
Okay, we do not. So, Alex Kelly, you're still here?
You're still here. Okay, great. So I guess before we wrap up, I guess they were talking in the previous interviews about kind of different ways of kind of alleviating or like mitigating homelessness and hunger. And what is your take on it? I mean, we were talking about maybe like community gardening earlier, or just honestly just sharing stories, or even, you know.
What do you think is the most important? What do you think we should do first?
Yeah, what is our best method of attack?
I think that first, you just have to be curious and interested in creating change. And mm-hmm. from there, action will inevitably follow. I think that there are incredible ways to kind of fuse these ideas that people have been bringing up. You know, like how could we develop a storytelling project around community gardening to alleviate hunger?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the ideas like that. You know, kind of creating opportunities for solutions to meet each other. I think it's something that would be interesting to think about.
To get mm-hmm. people sympathetic and kind of working towards the common, solving these common issues.
I think, because once again, I feel like when people are afraid, they don't want to help, but like by kind of meeting eye to eye, I think it mm-hmm. I think it brings people kind of closer together.
So practicing empathy and, you know, taking a chance in order to do it with people in your community who you've never talked to before.
We've got 3 minutes left on the show. I'd like to thank our guests again, Alex Kelly from,
I'd like to thank Alex Kelly, from her project entitled Listen to This, Recording Stories of Bangor's Homelessness, as well as our previous guest in the first half,
Tom Andrews, who is an administrative director from We Who Care Incorporated, a nonprofit organization. Thank you both for coming on.
Thank
This is I'm Kate Hall, and this is Tyler Simpson, and
thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening. Watch you wanna.